two nations are in your womb, and two peoples born of you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The elder shall serve the younger. If you're a Facebook friend, you know the first paragraph. In the season that finds us headed down the shore or crawling on the turnpike extension up the Poconos, or even taking a long plane ride across the pond, we usually have in our hand a book we have been meaning to read. For some, that book is a novel. True confession, I gave up on The Goldfinch at page 458 with 313 to go. And if anyone can tell me what happened to the painting, I would be most appreciative. For others, the book of choice was a mystery or a smutty beach romance. Ken, love it. For many this summer, it might be young adult fiction. In particular, Who's That Girl? The first novel of our own Blair Thornburg, which she is signing at Barnes & Noble on Rittenhouse Square Tuesday night, 7 o'clock. Had to get that in. Maybe instead of fiction, you grab a nonfiction book with a one-word title like potato or cod or fry. Then there are the history buffs among us who cannot wait to lose themselves in a good biography, Mark Bernstein, right? And it is biography that invites us into the stories of Jacob and Esau this morning. If you are a reader of biographies, you know that they often begin at the beginning, seeking hints in a man's lineage or a woman's upbringing that foreshadows what we call the character of a person. Details that explain either her greatness or his downfall. Likewise, the Bible begins at the beginning of the patriarchs and matriarchs' lives. But the biblical writers do so for a different reason than modern writers do. As Old Testament professor Richard Clifford notes, we are fascinated by the psyche of individuals who create their own destiny. While the Bible prefers to see the young person, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Samuel, David, even Jesus, as one of the people, and so looks in biography for clues about national destiny. Scripture speaks of nations while it speaks of individuals. Clifford goes on to say that we only get the national meaning of the story about Israel's ancestors when we pay attention to the details of the drama unfolding in the individual ancestor's life. The first detail that arrests our attention in the stories about Israel's ancestors is barrenness. Barrenness. In the Bible, barrenness is not a biological, but a theological detail. Barrenness alerts us to the fact that there are no natural guarantees for the future, and no way to ensure the inheritance of the family. It is detail that played a major role in the character of Isaac's mother and father, as well as a detail that marked Isaac's early life with Rebecca. Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebecca, had to trust not only their family's future, but also the future of God's promise of a people, generation upon generation, into God's hand, and not their own. Other families might have been free to invent and govern their own future, Walter Brueggemann reminds us. But this family is marked by promise. It receives life as an unexpected gift. Anyone here who has wrestled with the biological reality must be learned and practiced, valued and sustained. The longer the detail of barrenness marked their lives, the more Sarai and Abram abandoned trust by taking the future into their own hands. Hence, Abram, when he was 86 years old, at Sarai's suggestion, begged Sarai's maid Hagar. This is the Bible's family values, by the way. Immediately pregnant with Abram's firstborn son, and so a future. Hagar the maid is told by an angel of the Lord that her son shall be a wild ass of a man with his hand against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he shall live at odds with his kin. That is to say, when we take the future into our own self-interested hands, conflict ensues, personally and politically. Cluing national destiny in individual biography, as the biblical writer is wont to do. Tradition has it that Ishmael's 12 sons, born to his Egyptian wife, a wife outside the bloodline of Abraham, became the Arab people, a people blessed by God. But in Israel's telling of the story, only blessed. This brings us to the second detail in the stories of these first generations, birthright. From the beginning of this family and this people, it is clear that God will not be bound by human customs. Rather, God's favor and choosing will prove to be inscrutable and not a little unsettling. In telling Abraham, now in his 99th year, oh my God, my father's 91. 31. Now in his 99th year that Sarah will finally have a son, God in the same sentence denies Ishmael his birthright as a firstborn son. The right to inherit a double portion of the father's possessions and head of the household status when Abraham dies. God, instead, for no given reason, chooses the secondborn to carry the promise, a dubious distinction from Isaac's perspective on the top of Mount Moriah. Precious Isaac, who must have had a touch of PTSD, is 40 when he finally marries Rebecca, a descendant of Abraham's line, whose betrothal to Isaac was carefully orchestrated by God. The sermon you missed last Sunday because I didn't preach it. Like Isaac's mother, Rebecca turns out to be barren. But unlike his own parents, Isaac trusts God, prays to the Lord for his wife, and only 20 years later, God ends their barrenness, giving them the gift of a future. The ultrasound reveals twins, which would have been cause for joy, except that already the brothers had begun to struggle with each other in the womb. Actually, a better translation than struggle would be that they abused each other in the womb, causing Rebecca to ask why she had ever been born. In response, God tells her, lets her in on the secret that she suspect his silence is due to his scheming about how best to trick his brother into getting what he wants. In this way, Jacob is favored by his conniving mother, who favored him. While Esau shared his grandparents' penchant for making short-sighted choices, as well as his half-uncle's inclination to live at odds with his kin. In contrast to Esau's heedless volubility, Clifford observes, Jacob is unemotional and calculating. Jacob's grip on his older brother's birthright, ineffectual at birth, tightens in this boyhood encounter and will be complete at their father's deathbed, a story for next week. But remember, just as the character of each child has its origin in their ancestors, so the character of each nation will have its origin in the virtues and vices embedded in generation after generation of its people. The writer has in mind the character of Israel and the nations as he unfolds the story of Isaac and Ishmael, of Jacob and Esau. Human beings live by stories. Stories that tell us, as Austin would say, who and whose we are. It is why we grabbed a novel or two on the way to the beach and why I could not help but think this week about the current drama of individual character and national character unfolding while I wrestled with the present meaning of this ancient story. Considering the character of both fathers and mothers and brothers in relation to the generations that follow, I found myself wondering of us, what are the details in our personal biographies and our national life that have led us to replace the self-sacrificial character of the greatest generation with the self-aggrandizing character of my own? When were the seeds planted that caused us personally and as a people to exchange the value of deferred gratification that was in my parents for the experience of immediate satiation that is in me? How many generations did it take for our national character, forged in our welcome of the tired, the poor, the huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of other nations' teeming shores? How many generations did it take for us to quit trust and be subverted by fear and hatred? Reflecting on how the virtues and vices of earlier generations in a family become the destiny or fate of future generations, David Brooks wrote that it takes generations to hammer ethical considerations out of a person's mind and replace them with the logic of winning and losing. To take the human yearning to be good and replace it with a single-minded desire for material conquest. To take the human instinct for kindness and replace it with the law of the jungle mentality. The words could be said of many. In spite of being a Jew steeped in the story before us this morning, Brooks missed how his words concerning the generations of one family were in fact the words about a nation whose character partakes of Esau's short-sighted hunger, of Jacob's self-serving tricks, and also partakes of the conflict between them. That is why, but strangely in this present barrenness, where there are no natural guarantees for the future, and no way to secure the inheritance of a family, save as a gift of God. Our faith is not in the grasping and certitude of political maneuvering, but in the birthright of the privileged, subverted by God's Son, God's only Son, God's beloved, who has redeemed our human character from out of God's promised future